It is a new day dawning, and it's another edition of the Cosmic Citizen. Hello, and welcome to the program, everyone. This is Andre Traversa, and with me is Paula Thompson. How are you, Paula?
I'm great. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. And yes, it is another edition. It is a glorious day today on Saturday, October 18th, 2008. Okay. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint the listeners here. The got good news and bad news here. The bad news is that we were supposed to have a show with the Reverend Carlton Pearson today, who is not a Urantia book reader as of yet, although he does have a copy of the book now. But he is not able to be with us today. He asked if, first of all, to be frank with everybody, Paul and I have not received his book yet, which he wrote, called The Gospel of Inclusion. And also, and I talked to his assistant, and she basically suggested that she thought it would be a better idea if we did the show with him next week. He wants to look at our book, and he wants to look at the UB and kind of, you know, get a feel for that. And we haven't, as I said, we haven't gotten a chance to read his book yet. So we are not going to do the interview with Carlton today, but what we are going to do today is have our monthly treat that we love so much, which is our open phone segment. So for anybody who wants to call us and talk to us today, this morning, about anything and everything, Urantia book related, or maybe you have a prayer request, maybe you have something in your life that you want to share with us that's going on, whatever it might be, give us a holler.
Will we? And we already have a caller, Andre.
Oh.
So here we go. Good morning, 817. You're on Blog Talk, Cosmic Citizen. Hello? 817?
Hello?
Oh, they just dropped off. Maybe they weren't expecting this.
You know, I'm trying to. Oh, you know what? Yeah, 817 is Dallas, Texas. So.
Oh, maybe that
Fort
was
Worth,
Ann.
Texas,
maybe
so.
She was just trying to listen in with us. So. I know that sometimes Ann has a problem getting on the internet, so she just calls in and listens. So, Ann, if you're out there, call back. I won't click through.
Yeah. So anyway, so any, like as I said before, anybody wants to call in, our phone number here again is 646-716-8158. That's 646-716-8158 as it appears on your screen. Paula, what's anything on your mind this morning that you've been thinking about, maybe reflecting on, any sort of spiritual theme that has been running through your head lately or anything?
Well, you know, I'm in the throes right now of a yearly budget meeting that I do with the executive board of the Urantia Book Fellowship, and with the economy the way it is, you know, it's pretty tense. Trying to plan a year for a nonprofit organization like ours, not knowing for sure whether we're going to have any donations or not, and. You know, we do good work, but it's like most things. I think people don't realize what's all involved in even running a business, because most people don't have to run a business.
Most
people work for somebody, and that person takes care of all the details and all of the, you know, the taxes and the tax filings and the accountant and all of the things that are necessary if you're going to run a business legally. And, you know, so... it's just difficult. It's a difficult meeting to get through, and I'm actually glad to have a little break and spend some time with you guys, because that was getting pretty tense.
But you know what? You're following in the footsteps of Jesus, because Jesus had to do those things. So Jesus actually had to run a business, but he certainly had to take care of the finances in his family, and he gave financial counsel to his brother James, so he had to know something about these kinds of things.
Yeah, and you know, we're being the Urantia book tells us we're being trained as universe administrators. So I imagine that if it's hard to manage a small nonprofit, it'll be really hard to manage the universe.
Yeah, but I have to say that even though on the surface, you know, the universe may look like a huge bureaucracy when you look at the Urantia book, because there's so many levels of administration. On the other hand, though, I somehow I want to believe that it's much more efficient and much less red tape-ish than the government regulations we have to deal with here in America.
Well, you know what?
Or in other countries.
What uncomplicates it is the fact that everybody who works for God is working for the right reasons. They're motivated by the highest motivation, which is service. And so, you know, that's God's economy. That's how the universe runs, is on service. And so I think that's when things get complicated, when greed comes in and selfish motivations, then everything gets vastly complicated. So I think you're right, Andre. If you had a host of loyal, intelligent, highly intelligent beings who are all willing to do what you want them to do because they believe it's the right thing to do, you'd have a much easier time of managing things. And we have a caller.
Okay.
Hi, I think 562, you're on Blog Talk to Cosmic Citizen. Good morning.
Aloha, Paula and Andre Norman here.
Good morning. Norm, how are you?
Just fine. Tuning in, and my computer is out, so I'm having to listen to it by phone. But I'll be checking in with you from time to time, and sounds like the program's going very well.
Oh, thanks. You know, I have some good news for you.
Oh, good.
Saskia put up, for those of you who don't know who I'm talking about when I say Saskia, Saskia is the manager of Saskia Ravori, manages SquareCircles.com, and she's an extraordinary fundraiser for the Arantia community. She takes worthwhile projects that people want to get done, and she will evaluate them and then help to raise funds for them. And she's an amazingly gifted editor. She worked for Disney for many, many years as an editor and final checker for animated films. And she does this wonderful website, www.squarecircles.com. And as you may know, Norman Ingram created an organization called Urantia Nations Outreach, or UNO for short. And they're working on a new project that Saskia just put up your article for Pradhana Fuchs and Kolara Magni. I don't know how to say Kolara's last name, but they're planning a mission to Patagonia, and they're going to be taking books and placing them in libraries. Sorry about the phone, folks. And so there's a great article up at squarecircles.com about that wonderful Urantia seed sowing mission. And if you want to go and check it out and read all about it, it's there. And
yeah,
it's up now.
Just printed it out and brought it downstairs with me to give you a call on it. So yeah, thank you so much. It's a beautiful layout. Whoever did that, and
Saskia did it, and she's very good at that.
Everybody. Okay, God bless for now. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you. So yeah, so we were talking again earlier about how if we're going to be about universe administration, and how hopefully it's going to run. I think not just hopefully. I think it's pretty obvious that it runs more efficiently and more smoothly and with more integrity than a lot of the administrations that are here on Urantia. So, and as you said, because it's motivated by service. So that's really the key thing.
That is the key, and the Urantia book says, you know, the service motive has to replace the profit motive, and I think that goes in line with Jesus saying, seek first the kingdom of heaven, because if we're motivated by service, everything will just come beyond that. Mm. I mean, if we seek first the kingdom of heaven, which certainly we know loving service is of the kingdom, and it's a high kingdom value, if we seek that first, then all things needful will be added. And so it's just about right motivations and doing things for the right reason, not for a selfish reason, but for an unselfish reason.
And, you know,
so,
one of the things – I'm sorry,
go ahead.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think we are blessed with in having this new revelation is it clarifies so many things about God and about our relationship with him and how the universe works. And one of the things that you mentioned, for example, was you mentioned this economy, the bad economy we're living in. You know, I read a lot of Christian publications, Paul, and unfortunately, some of them have the idea that God sent this economic disaster. You know, I actually was reading something a few days ago where someone said, you know, God sent the second act of disaster, and we need to start with that assumption and go forward. And she quoted the Bible where it says something like, God says, I create well-being and I send calamity, you know. And Jesus in the Urantia book tells us that in the Old Testament, at a certain time among the Hebrews, people believed that God created both good and evil. But then later, if you read, you know, if you go later in the Bible, as you progress through the Old Testament, you see that concept changing, and people begin to realize that God did not create evil, that He only does good. And so, I just think it's so liberating to me to know that, you know, that we have further confirmation of something that we can figure out just from common sense, that God doesn't send these kinds of terrible calamities. These kinds of things are either brought on by our own choices, or they're just part of the inherent nature of living in a time space, and living in time space conditions. It's kind of like the prodigal son. You know, I tell people, you know, God, the Father did not need to send any kind of judgment or any kind of punishment to get the prodigal son to come back to Him. You know, the prodigal son just got, you know, life got his attention. You know, and he got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in living in an imperfect time and space world that, you know, God doesn't need to inflict punishments and inflict judgments on us to get our attention.
Well, Andre, that is such a that is such a critical point. I mean, I think if we could get down to the heart of what's really bothering humanity, and I thought about our interview last week with Julia, I thought about it all week, and I thought about, you know, what she reiterated, and this notion that God is not answering our prayers, or this notion that this notion by all religionists that somehow God is inflicting us, and the explanation about free will and about how really ultimately we're inflicting ourselves. I mean, by our own choices. You know, God gave us the greatest gift of all, and that is free will, a right to choose for ourselves what we want. And we make bad choices, and we blame it on God.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we can't blame this economic crisis on anybody, but on anything but human greed and bad choices. We can't blame that on God.
Sure.
God did not do that, and God would not choose that for us. He has a very different idea in mind. And one of the most beautiful things about the Urantia book is it really goes into great detail about what God's plan is for us. The ultimate loving family where everybody's working in cooperation and love and understanding and ultimately wanting to achieve understanding, sympathetic understanding, and cooperation with everybody else. And, you know, these ideas are so fleshed out in the Urantia book that by the time you're done reading the book, you have such a handle on what it is God really wants for us and how to make the right choices in life. And, you know, I think that anytime something bad happens, we have a tendency to think that it's somehow some kind of retribution from God, when in reality, it's our own retribution. It's our own base tendencies coming back to bite us in the butt.
Right, first of all, and you know, there are a lot of other causes too. Sometimes it's just, you know, the randomness of you know, random events. You know, I mean, I don't know about you, Paula, but I'm glad that God allows for a lot of randomness in the universe, and for, you know, He allows accidents. He allows those things because if He didn't, if He was in control of every single little thing, He'd be a tyrant. You know, He'd be micromanaging every little thing. So, you know, there are a lot of things that happen. A lot of people say everything happens for a reason. I actually don't happen to think that's true. There are a lot of stuff that happens for no good reason at all. It just happens. Now, I believe God can use anything that happens, you know, for His glory and for our growth. But you know, there's a lot of stuff.
And so can we.
Exactly.
And so can we
exactly.
Use it for our glory and our growth if we have the right perspective about it. And, you know, Andre, wait, to me, and I've thought about this, you know, the great thing about life in the universe of universes, in this life and as we go forward, is it's like a really great game, a great card game, one you'd love to play, the kind of game you love to play. Because why? Because it's equal elements of skill and chance.
That's
it's
a
not
good point.
About, yeah, the kind of games that stimulate you intellectually are the kind of games that have equal elements of skill and chance. So you have to master the ability to play the dice you throw or the hand you're dealt. And life is like that. And part of grace for me, you know, is moving through life with dignity and with love and mercy. That's grace. Grace is like moving through seamlessly, not with discord, disharmony, you know, exaggeration or drama or all of the things that we humans add to life to make it more complicated. And so grace is,
yeah.
You know, I've often thought being spiritual doesn't mean you don't feel. Being spiritual means you get over your emotions much quicker.
Well, and I also would argue that sometimes being spiritual might mean feeling even more deeply, because I think that us as spiritual people, you know, I think if we're spiritual, you know, we should have more sensitivity, more tenderness. But I also agree with you that, you know, that we can heal quicker because we have resources to heal, you know, from which to heal.
Exactly. And you know, yeah, I agree with you. It doesn't mean that you don't feel. In fact, quite the opposite. You feel even more deeply. But you have the immunities, the spiritual immunities, to allow a lot of that stuff to roll off because you have a long-distance viewpoint. You know that, like the wise old sage says, this too will pass. And, you know, you'll get over it. And it'll be something different, but you just deal with it all with grace and dignity and love. And that's how you get through it, with the least amount of damage. We have a comment on the board about Carlton getting the book. And the comment from Pamela says, it would be a little difficult to just look at the book and get a true feel for the book. That is the one problem with people just glancing at the book. It really takes more time than just a glance. You know, Pam, I couldn't agree with you more about that. And unfortunately, we know unless Carlton is a super speed reader, he's not going to get through that book.
No, that's true. But you know what? I want to honor where our guest is coming from. Because, you know, if we have an opportunity for a guest who wants to look at your answer book before we get on the air, has never read it, then, you know, especially a guy like Carlton Pearson, who, to me, that's a chance I want to jump at. Because, and you know, the other thing is we didn't get a chance to look at his book. So I just want to make sure that we have all our ducks in a row, you know, before we. I mean, we could have done the interview, yes, but that was their preference, and so I want to make sure that we, you know, we honor that.
And sometimes, you know, if they don't look at the book, it's a little better for us, because and if it would be if they do look at just the book, that would be fine. But oftentimes, they go online. And they get a whole host of really negative things. I don't know if any of our listeners have ever just gone online and typed in your ranch and did a little exploration of what comes up. But a lot of unsavory stuff from both within and without the Arantia movement. Of course, there's fundamentalists out there calling us devils and that kind of thing and saying, you know, this is why this book is of the devil and this and that. But then there's also Urantia book readers out there demolishing each other. And so, you know, I'm always a little concerned when somebody goes online what they'll find. One of the reasons why I wanted to create Truth Book was because I wanted there to be a pure outreach site where people could find the book and the truth, beauty, and goodness of the book without a lot of the movement politics or, you know, the negativity that goes along with it.
The thing is, that's, I also pointed Carlton and his assistant to the Wikipedia article on the Arantia book, and I'll just, you know, give everybody here my own bias. I think the Wikipedia piece is quite good.
I agree.
A very fair and balanced look at the book, and I will, when I'm introducing people to the book, I always, you know, point them to that, because I think it's, but before I even, you know, tell them anything about the book. I mean, before they even look at the book itself, I think it's a great introduction. It's just a great overview. It explains a lot of things about, explains certain concepts in the book, and it also explains some things about the history and origin. And I just think it's a really great, I think they've done a really good job with it.
You know, and that, and Wikipedia, isn't that a brilliant thing that it's an open encyclopedia where people can go in and edit it, and you get, you know, it's really a work of many people. Who knows who all's gone in there and edited that article? But it's a reflection. That's, I think that's why it reflects such a balanced point of view, and that's why it is fair, because, you know, your Rancher Book readers are willing to have some of the objective criticisms in there, but some of those things are just plain unfair, and so they get edited out, and that makes it balanced. That makes it fair.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's a self-correcting site, and that's a great thing. I don't know if there's anything on the Rancher Book on fact check. I don't know if the fact
I've
check.
I've never tried that.
That would be an interesting thing to find out. But yeah. So anyway, speaking of comments and callers, again, if you want to give us a call today, it's open phone segment 646-716-8158. If anybody wants to call in, please do. Boy. I just was thinking again about how blessed we are, Paula, to have people in the Rancher movement like Pato Banton, who, you know, we played a little segment of. And I just think it's great that there are people like him who are publicly willing to take a stand, who are publicly willing to, you know, proclaim their faith in the book and to use their talents, you know, to give us the gift of music. And I just think I just think it's a real blessing that we have people like him.
Oh, we're totally blessed. And I think we said that to Pato when we had him on, thanked him for his willingness to stand up for the Rancher Book. You know, there's been a lot of musicians that came in the 70s that loved the Rancher Book. There's the rock group Spirit that actually created a song on one of their albums called Urantia, and Jerry Garcia would openly admit it was one of his favorite books. In fact, many of his friends called it Jerry's Bible, Jerry Garcia's
wow.
Grateful Dead. Elvis Presley, it was listed in his one authorized biography as one of his 10 favorite books. And when I was at Graceland, I was amazed to see, my favorite part of Graceland was not the house, obviously. The house is like you walking into a 70s house. I mean, it still has long shag carpet up on the walls, stuff like that. So it was schmaltzy. I mean, it was kind of strange. It was definitely a blast from the past. They haven't changed anything. But my favorite part was in that, where they had his private offices and they had all of his memorabilia behind glass cases. And he had many, many books. And he would make notes in the margins and underline them. And as I was fascinated by reading Elvis Presley's books and seeing that he was a deep thinker. I mean, these were not lightweight books. They were very deep philosophical books. So it didn't surprise me to learn
that. And did you see the Rancher Book in the memorabilia section?
No. It wasn't there. And this was actually before I learned that that it was listed as one of his 10 favorite books in his only authorized autobiography. And I have really good authority on that.
Wow.
The guy that did it came and brought the book and showed where it was listed. But once I heard that, I went, well, that makes perfect sense. I've seen the other books you read. And they were very, very deep books. So, you know, and I've heard that, for instance, I've heard that Wayne Dyer, one time I was working at the expo in San Francisco, and a guy came down from Wayne Dyer's lecture and came right up to our booth. We had the Urantia booth there, and he said, wow, Wayne Dyer just said in his lecture that the Urantia book is one of his favorite books. And
wow.
I said, wow. I said, how did that come up? He said, well, it was after the lecture. He came down and was talking to people and answering questions, and a guy asked him, you know, so much of what you say is like what I find in the Urantia book. And Wayne said, yeah, it's one of my favorite books.
Wow.
So, you know, those are the kind of things. You won't get those kind of endorsements.
Yeah, it's good to know that there are people, that this book is the book is circulating and that it's getting out, and I think that's awesome. I'm just really glad. I just wish that some of these folks had time to, you know, to come to conferences or get involved, but I understand that some of the, you know, that many of them can't. And so that's why I think it's so great that someone like Pato is so willing to do that kind of thing. And to, you know, that's just a huge blessing.
Oh, so. Yeah. And someday, you know, I predict, Andre, someday somebody will openly endorse it, some huge personality. And that'll cause a big controversy about it. But it's inevitable that it's going to happen. And someone will be willing to fall on that sword big time. And that'll be an interesting thing to see. And
it'll be interesting. What if the person who endorses it is somebody that that really is already a controversial person? What if the person endorsing it is somebody that some Urantrop readers don't like? It'll be an interesting thing if that happens.
Well, somebody like, you know, Timothy Leary, although he's not with us anymore, but someone who already is controversial, yeah, that would be. Of course, then someone like that wouldn't get everyone's attention. You know, I mean, if you had someone like Oprah, for instance, or, you know, someone on that level, it would certainly get a lot of people's attention. And, you know, I believe, really, honestly, with my whole heart, Andre, that this thing, I often think about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And, you know, they came to arrest him. And Peter got ready to draw his sword. And Jesus said to him, put your sword away. He said, even now, I have legions of angels who would deliver me from this handful of men. And I thought, certainly, the Urantia book has that kind of celestial ministry around it. And we humans are overly concerned that we're going to mess it up. I really think...
Yes, I agree with you. Yeah, I agree. Because it's like, where's... You know, this is, I think, a real opportunity for us to just trust God and to trust, you know, his angels and to trust the various beings that are involved in it. You know, that's why, you know, I talk to certain people and they're like, you know, they're so concerned that someone is going to screw it up, and they're so concerned. Well, sure, they are going to make mistakes, but guess what? Jesus, you know, looked his apostles in the eyes and told them to go out and preach the gospel, knowing full well that they were going to make mistakes. But you know what? Guess what? That's okay. It's better to do something than do nothing. I mean, that's why, and we've talked about this so many times on the air, Paula, but I just love the commentary that, you know, the midwayers give us on the parable of the talents. But, you know, I think the parable of the talents is probably one of the most misunderstood parables that Jesus gives, because I think a lot of people think, well, you better use your talents or God's going to smack you down. You know, that's not what it's about. What it's really about is, you know, what are the talents? The talents are gems of truth. You know, we are all custodians of truth. And, you know, and better that that we take, you know, I think what Jesus is telling us to do is take a risk with truth. You know, be flexible with it, proclaim it, revise it. You know, one of the things that's so interesting, some people are so, you know, they're so, and this is true among Urantropic readers as well as among biblical fundamentalists. They're like, oh, we can't ever change anything in the Urantropic, or we can't ever do anything. And I actually heard somebody get upset because of the cover of one of the latest editions of the Urantia book, you know, the cover was different, you know. And, you know, in that commentary, what we have there is we have the midwayer saying, you know, that, you know, what a travesty it would be if, you know, 2,000 years from now, the master's followers said to the master, you know, oh, we didn't change your teachings. We didn't do anything to, you know, we just kept them exactly the way you gave them to us. And, you know, and it also tells us in the Urantia book that the spirit of truth, I think it gives us every generation an opportunity to restate the gospel, to restate the teachings of Jesus. And I'll give you a perfect example, Paul, of how I think this is so wonderful. If you remember, there's the Lord, you know, Jesus gave his apostles the Lord's Prayer. But he was reluctant to give them the Lord's Prayer. The Urantia book tells us that he really wanted to encourage them to just pray spontaneously and not, but they really wanted some kind of a prayer that they could repeat, you know. So he went ahead and gave it to them, okay? And I think, I'm glad that they tell us that because, you know, there's a a church, the Unity Church, which you may, I'm sure some of us, our listeners may be familiar with, they have their own version of the Lord's Prayer, which I think is really beautiful, and it says things like, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy will is done, thy kingdom come, as on earth as it is in heaven. And it says, who gives us this day our daily bread, who forgives us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us, who delivers us from evil. So, what do they do? They change the words a little bit. But to me, I think they upstep the prayer. And I think that's exactly what Jesus, the kind of thing Jesus wants us to do with his teachings. He wants truth to be flexible and living. And as the Spirit guides us, you know, I could just see some people saying, oh, that's blasphemy to change the prayer. You know, but I think that, I don't know about you, but I think that's exactly the kind of thing Jesus wants us to do.
Well, yeah, and he talks quite a bit about becoming fossilized and crystallized so that, you create a form that you can't break free from. You know, it's like God bless you, Diane, you gave us that wonderful analogy of the shoes that are too tight.
Yes, yes.
Can you imagine a child having to live in the shoes that they wore when they were 5 and now that they're 10 and now that they're 20 and they're still in those same, trying to wear those same shoes they were wearing when they're 5. You know, we're growing and changing. We're evolving beings. And we need to, I have to tell a story here. But before I do, I just want to say to you guys on the board, they're talking about why is it so important for a celebrity to endorse the book. Well, it's not. The book will stand on its own. It's absolutely beautiful on its own. It doesn't need anybody to endorse it. You know, it just needs people to pick it up. So I absolutely agree. It's nice when celebrities find it and when they're willing to have, when they have the courage to endorse it. But if they don't, it doesn't matter to me at all. It'll always be the most shining star in my life anyway, regardless of who else agrees with me about that. It's changed my life in every way for the good. But I want to get back to what you were saying, Andre, about how we add meaning to things. And I want to say that, years ago I've done a lot of public introductions to the Urantia book, and I have found outreach very gratifying. I always do, and I'm a classic extrovert. And so I was in uptown New York, and we set up an expo, and this was back in the 90s. Dear man, Anthony Marquito used to come and pick me up at the airport, and he would take me to the hotel where we were setting up, and he'd help me set up the Urantia book. He wouldn't stay there to talk to people or do outreach, but he always wanted to do something to serve. So he would come and pick me up and at the airport and take me to my hotel and help me set up the booth. So we had done that, and we had a few hours to kill, and he said, come on, Paul, I want to show you something. So we were walking around uptown, and I went by Central Park, and he said, oh, it's St. Patrick's Cathedral. He took me by the hand and led me into this beautiful cathedral. And it was right at communion. And he got very reverent. He grew, as a boy, he grew up in that church. And he got very reverent, and he said, oh, it's communion. And he took my hand, and he led me down. We were very respectful. And we went on the side, and we crept into a pew, and we sat on the edge of the seat. I was just following his lead, We sat on the edge of the seat and just intensely watched the faithful take communion. And he sat there silent for several moments and took it in. And then he turned to me and said something that I'll never forget. He said, you see, Paula, as a boy growing up in this church, we really believed we were taking on Christ.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, communion, I will never see it the same way again. I thought of it as a meaningless tradition. But no, it's just what it is. They have the meaning. They bring the meaning to it. If it's meaningful to you, if as you take that bread and that wine, you say, Jesus, I'm taking you on. Once again, I recommit myself to you. I'm taking you on. You are in me. You are of me. I am with you. Now it's meaningful, but you added the meaning to it.
Right, and we know as Urantia recruiters that the bread and wine are not truly the body and blood of Jesus. But you know what? If we can, but again, how can we take even that tradition and upstep that a little bit and spiritualize it? And the way we do that is we can say, that as I'm receiving the bread and wine, I'm receiving Jesus. I'm receiving Jesus. I'm letting him a little further into my heart than I did before. And isn't, who can argue with that,
know. And so, you know, any tradition, I mean, you know, oftentimes, you know, Jesus mentioned traditional barrenness. And I understand that, too, because a lot of it is just you think it matters to God if you stand up and sit down and pray and stand up and sit down and say this and this and that, and it gets very sing-songy and ritualized, and it becomes meaningless then. And I think it's up to us to keep meaning in everything we do. And,
well, you know what? You know what? See, I think we need to be careful as Erantro greeters, too, because some Erantro greeters will just say, oh, all traditions are bad, we should just throw everything out. And Jesus doesn't tell us that. He says in the Erantro book, he says, on the one hand, he says, don't put new wine to old wineskins, but he also says that, you know, if something, he says not to assume that everything new is good and not to throw out everything old. He says, if something is old and it's also true, then you drink it with gladness, you know, and it's like an old friend, you know. And if it's new and it's also true, then be willing to embrace that. So, you know, and the other thing is that, there's a great statement I heard once from one of my favorite writers, Jonathan Bradshaw, who used to be a show on PBS called Bradshaw and the Family, and he had a talk show in the 90s as well, for a few months only. It was called The Bradshaw Difference, and that was a great show. It was too bad that it left television, but he said something really interesting, Paula. He said, you know, tradition is the living faith of dead people. Traditionalism is the dead faith of living people. So,
wow.
You know, so tradition itself is not a bad thing. Tradition could be just like people honor traditions like Christmas traditions or Easter traditions, mm-hmm. or different holiday traditions, and it can really be a very sentimental thing and a meaningful thing. What we want to avoid is traditionalism, where we become in bondage to the tradition. And so the tradition is imprisoning us rather than liberating us.
Exactly. And now we add some sort of sense of sacredness to the tradition, you know, which is not really justified. And we think that, you know, we do it because God will be mad at us if we don't or something. Well, we
right.
have a caller.
Okay.
Let's see. Maybe we'll do better with this one. Maybe not. Let's see what happens. 514, you're on Blog Talk, The Cosmic Citizen.
Hi, everyone. This is Diane LeBret.
Hey, Diane.
Hi, Diane.
I was just calling to bring some light, I guess. I was listening to the program. I'm just going to take a few minutes. You were saying that someone on the board was saying that if some celebrity endorsed the Erantro book, it would help. Well, there are three very well-known celebrities that are endorsing the Erantro book, and I just felt compelled to call if it can help people, and that is, first of all, a person that I admire greatly and the world admires him. He's a man of a very few words. His name is Deepak Chopra.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Deepak Chopra, the author of How to Know God, The Soul's Journey and the Mystery of Mysteries, wrote, read the Erantro book and spiritualize your thinking. I think it says it all. So Deepak Chopra, who the world knows, endorses that. And by the way, this is on a book from TheoQuest. Theo meaning God, so the quest for God.com, TheoQuest.com. And then there's another one, a second one. Her name is called Marianne Williamson. She's a very well-known celebrity in America. She was on Oprah. She's actually on Oprah's website every day. She's a lady who did the Course in Miracles like I did. And she wrote a book, A Return to Love, which became a bestseller. And she wrote, the Erantro book has been very important to me. The material has always fed my hunger for a deeper understanding of the purpose of life and the best way to live it. Any spiritual seeker is bound to find sustenance here in the Erantro book. Well, coming from Marianne Williamson, it has weight. In this scale, it would be like saying an actor or an actress, you know, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie backing up something. Well, in the spiritual realm and religious realm, to have Deepak Chopra and Marianne Williamson say that, it says something. And then the third one is the author of a book that we all know, Conversations with God. The author's name is Neil Donald Walsh. And he says, while I do not agree with everything in the Erantro book, which I think is great because he's truthful enough to
yes,
say that
yes.
he's on the search himself, He says, I know that every path that opens us to unexplored understanding can be a path to God. So those three people, having accepted to endorse the Urantia book, I think they're pretty good celebrities, you know, and there's many more that some people don't know. I just wanted to drop this because your listeners were saying that some celebrities should. Well, it has been endorsed already.
Actually, one of our listeners, Dan, said, I guess, or somebody on the board said that they didn't think it was that important.
At the same time, that's true, because, you know, you can talk about someone, if God was an actual person, let's say he's got two legs and he's standing on this earth that we call Urantia, if he was there, you can say how great a person is, but you will never get to know how great that person is until you meet them and know them personally, when you can actually say, I know wherever I speak because I met him or I met her. I can say Paula Thompson is a fantastic being. Andre Traversa is a wonderful guy. But until I meet them in person, I will only talk hearsay. But it's only when I sit with them and I commune with them, make one with them, that I can say, wow, what great souls they are. So it's the same thing with God. We could say the greatest thing until we're blue in the face. If the person is minded to close their heart to understanding, what you say means nothing. And then you can actually be silent and say nothing. But when the miracle happens and it transperses your heart, your soul, your being, your mind, your whole being, then you say, I need no more to be convinced because I know. So that's the way I feel about God and the Urantia book and the teachings of Jesus. It's only when you live them, when they become part of you, that you say, that's what he meant. That's what it is. And then all you've got to do now is go to work and try to help people. Do the same thing. Reach the same level of understanding and being. Amen.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you, you know, I want to thank you for bringing up TheoQuest, because, you know, we've talked about the truthbook.com. And simultaneously, two websites were launched. The other one is TheoQuest.org. I believe it's .org.
It says .com, Paula.
Oh, TheoQuest.com. Okay, thank you,
yes.
Diane. And TheoQuest is also the brainchild of several wonderful Urantia book readers, longtime readers, who also created another great outreach site. And the book that Diane is mentioning is created for outreach. It's a wonderful introduction to the Urantia book, and it has those endorsements on the back. And, you know, they are highly respected authors. So Bro Dave got real controversial here on the board. He said, oh, they're just liberals. They're just liberals. When are the Christian conservatives going to start endorsing the Urantia book? And, you know, I think that liberals, I'm always interested that people use that word liberal like it's a dirty word or something. But I think that liberals, in a way, are more free to endorse something because people don't expect them to be so entrenched in
behind one position or another. Well, it's kind of funny, though, Paula, because the word liberal has gone through quite an evolution of meaning. I mean, the original word means liberales, which means a free person as opposed to a slave. Okay, so the original, a classical understanding of a liberal is a good thing. I am personally, this is the first time I'm saying this on the air, personally, I am not politically liberal by America's standards today. I would be considered quite conservative, but 100 years ago, I would have been considered quite a liberal. So, you know, 100 years ago, what we would call right wing today was considered very liberal. And so it's just an interesting thing how that word has come to mean so many different things.
You know, I would like to, can I add something and then I will let you continue? Because I was thinking of the Urantia book and people asking for, you know, confirmation or whatever. And then it just dawned on me. The Urantia book is food for the soul. is food for our mind, for our spirit, for our soul. And when you have a restaurant that becomes a big success, when you have people write articles in the paper about, you know, folks, if on the weekend you want to go somewhere and enjoy yourself, enjoy the food, you've got to go to XYZ place. It's only until you go, you sit down and you try it, you savor the food, you taste it, that after this you can say, wow, did it ever taste good? Did it feed my body? I felt so full. I felt so, it was just a delight. And then they tell their friends. So the Urantia book is the same thing. If you can just sit at the table of reflection and taste the food, taste the words of truth that it feeds to your soul, and take time to savor it, chew it, let it digest, not swallow it down like they do for foie gras, you know, open the mouth and shove it down. When you take the time in silence and in solitude at times and you taste the food of the Urantia book, I am sure in my heart and soul that no one can come out of that meal still hungry. Their soul is fed.
Diane, it's amazing that you should say this, because Larry on the board makes this comment, our dear friend Larry Watkins. He says, the most important endorsement is the personal one that occurs when one sits down and reads the book. There it is. I mean,
right on.
I agree with that. But, you know, let me also make a point. And this is something that I really would like to share with people. And that is that, you know, to be honest with you, when I first discovered the Urantia book, though, it didn't resonate with me right away. I mean, it resonated with my intellect, but it didn't resonate with my heart. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One is that, and we've talked about this on the air before, a lot of the study groups I was involved in were strictly intellectual. They digested the book, and they would parse the book, and they would talk about the book for hours, which is fine. Don't get me wrong. I love that. I am not anti-intellectual in any way, shape, or form. But there was, you know, there was no sense of group prayer or group worship or anything like that. And so I would go to Christian churches to get those kinds of needs met. And so I would come back from a lot of Urantia book study groups feeling, well, this is really an interesting academic exercise, but it didn't feed my soul or my heart. And when I would read the Urantia book, to be honest with you, initially it did not really feed my heart or my soul. It just fed my mind, and I would come away not really feeling much better. If I was depressed or upset, but here's what happened. There are two things that happened. I rejected the Urantia book for about 10 years. But you know what? I believe I needed to walk away from the book for a while, for a couple of reasons. One is because I think I needed to get some life experience in me, but the most important thing was I needed to develop a relationship with God, and I needed to experience God directly and intimately for myself. And as much as I love the Urantia book, I think it's really important for us to remember the Urantia book is not a substitute for our relationship with God. We cannot make an idol out of the book. The book does not point back to itself. The book points to God. And one of the things that brought me back to the Urantia book was I went through an extremely painful time in my life in 2003, where I went through kind of an 18-month depression. But I got really, really close to God during that time. And a few years later, I was in church, and a pastor was saying some things about God, that God was a wrathful, angry God, a vengeful God. And I said, you know what? That can't be true. Because that's not the God I know. That's not the God that I tasted directly. That's not the God that I had an experience with. You know, what does it say in the Psalms? It says, taste and see that the Lord is good. And I had to have a direct experience with God. I've talked about this on the air before, how I would practice something called listening prayer, where I would write letters to God, and I would listen to what I heard God say back to me and write it down in my journal. And so I had to do those kinds of things before I could get back into the Urantia book. And you know, because I had that direct experience with God, that confirmed so many of the things that are in the Urantia book. So I think to me the Urantia book is really good to the extent that the Urantia book leads us into a relationship with God. But that's really, again, I would say that as wonderful as the Urantia book is, the Urantia book itself cannot, you know, we have to be careful that we don't take a book and try to substitute that, you know, for a relationship.
Well, you're absolutely right, Andre, and if you could put it into a nutshell, what it does for you, it really does introduce you to God, and it really does dispel some myths about God. But let's talk about that for a minute. You know, the Urantia book says, No chick can be had without the shell, and no shell is of any worth after the chick is hatched. But when you look at human nature, you see how comfortable we become within our shell, and how difficult it becomes to break that shell. It's not unlike being born. If you think of what a child must go through when they're born, you know, they're in this environment where everything is provided for them. They have to worry about nothing. It's warm and safe and comforting and dark and, you know, and contained, self-contained. And all of a sudden, their entire environment rejects them and pushes them out into space and light and none of these things that they've ever experienced before. Now the whole game changes. Reality completely changes. And yet it's good. But the child goes through trauma getting to that point, just like the mother goes through trauma getting the child to that point. It's the same in all of life. We have to break the shell. We have to, because on the other side, we have to tear away the veil, because even though not knowing sometimes is comforting to us, we think we have all the answers, and that's comforting. We have to sooner or later come face to face with the unreality of certain things that we're believing. And we have to, and if we are truly lovers of the truth, it's just the experience you had, Andre. You, at first you go, oh, ouch, you know, that hurts.
Right.
But if you really love the truth, you see the liberating qualities of it, and you say, well, wow, that hurts, but on the other side of it, it feels pretty good.
Right.
I don't have to be a prisoner to that belief anymore.
And you know, at the same time, folks, I feel that that is the true exercise of faith, like Jesus taught, and that is to have faith that when the time is ripe, in the right time and place, whoever needs to find the Urantia book, to discover the Urantia book, will. In the meantime, the best thing we can do is ourselves live it. You know, they say that Jesus' faith was very simple. Two things, just like a coin, a two-sided coin, to trust God and to believe in men. And I feel that when we meet people one-on-one, if we just look at them, and as we're looking at them in the eyes and talking with them and communing with them, connecting with them, if we just think to trust God and to believe in men, what needs to be done will be done. To me, that is having faith. You know, we put a lot of responsibility on our back. We think we hold the equilibrium of the universe on our shoulders while it's all being done without, I'm talking to you, I'm listening to you, and your heart is beating, your biochemistry is going on without our taking care of it. So if we really have faith, true faith, then the Urantia book will come in its right time, because it's like taking the most beautiful weight exercise and giving it to a child. You can break his back and harm him. So it's the same thing. When that truth is ready to reach a person, it will. At the same time, we can use inspiration. We can be inspiration and all that. But trust God with a smile of faith that things will happen in their due time. On this, I'm going to let you continue, my friends. I love you.
I love you, thank you.
I just felt guided to call and say that, okay? Bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye, Diane.
Okay.
Well, you know, and Andre, I have to interject, because Carlton Pearson is coming on, and, you know, I think I told you, this is so exciting to me. Because when I first heard the story of Carlton Pearson, I was so impressed, and I'll tell you why. Brother Dave on the board asked, you know, when are the conservative Christians going to endorse the Urantia book? I can't say when, but I know they will, because the Urantia book tells us that Christianity is the cocoon in which and this gives me a great opportunity to say you are absolutely right, Andre. It is Jesus' concept of the kingdom.
Okay.
Jesus' concept of the kingdom that is sleeping in the cocoon of Christianity. So I said the religion of Jesus, and essentially it's the same thing. It was my mind interpreting, though. He tried to teach a different concept of the kingdom, and we know from the Urantia book that he had a difficulty doing that. But
right.
And he didn't really even want to teach kingdom. He wanted to teach something more like family, but that was not even a concept that was going to fly in his day. So, you know, he stuck with kingdom because that's what people understood. But it was his concept of the kingdom, and you're absolutely right about that. But, Carlton, you know, we know that sooner or later, and I was going to say earlier, some big Christian religion is going to endorse the Urantia book. It's just a matter of time that it's going to happen. But what's it going to take for that to happen? What it's going to take is an incredible amount of courage to stand up. And, you know, we can be glib about this because maybe none of us have ever experienced this, but I got to share a story with you. Because it's incredibly courageous for a man like Carlton Pearson, and this is why I admire him so much, to say, look, God showed me there is no hell. And I'm going to stand up here in front of my mega church and tell them that. And it was like Jesus feeding the 5,000. When he was done telling them he wouldn't be his king, all but 100 walked away, right?
Right.
Well, this was kind of what happened to Carlton. And, of course, I admire Jesus greatly because although the apostles were crushed when that happened, Jesus said, look, we have 100 true believers. We can build on that. And you know, and Carlton has gone through the same thing. And the kind of courage it takes to admit when you have a lot to lose, even your livelihood. And here's a story. I don't know who this person is. I've heard about him. He was a top educator in the Baptist church, in their whole college curriculum. He planned their entire college curriculum. And it was learned that he was reading the Urantia book.
Wow.
And he was called before the board and told to renounce it. They told him just straight out, either renounce this or lose your job. Now, think about how hard this guy had to work
Wow.
to achieve that level of career. And they said, you know, we don't mind that you've read it. Just say you don't believe it. And he honestly said, I can't do that.
Wow.
I can't do that. And they fired him. And couples, another story I've heard, and I've talked to many, many people, thousands of Urantia book readers. I've worked with Urantia book readers shoulder to shoulder doing these expos since 1989. And another couple who was very much involved with their church and a beloved family in their church. I mean, they were much loved in their church. They both sat on the board. They had high positions of responsibility. And they wanted so badly to share the Urantia book with somebody there, but they knew, oh, we dare not, right? We dare not do this because, oh, there'll be bad consequences if we do. They just knew it.
Right.
So they had this guy who was a very, very good friend of theirs. And after many years, Andre, of knowing this man and talking to him in dinners and a friendship that had gone on, a close friendship, social friendship, you know, spending time with this guy, hiking, doing things with him, they really felt like he could hear, he'd understand. He would actually probably love the Urantia book. And, you know, he probably would have. But he couldn't break the shell.
Yes.
And
yes.
So they got up their courage and they told him about it. They said, you know, we know that you would love this book. What did he do? He ran immediately to the pastor, immediately, and tattled on them. What were the repercussions? They were literally kicked out of their church.
Yeah.
They were shunned. They were not welcome. They went from being beloved contributors in every way, contributing time, money, energy, love, everything, all of their gems.
Well, you know, Paula, this has been, and again, I don't know how much I've shared this on the air, but this has been, to some extent, my own experience. I mean, I come from a conservative Christian background, and I still hang around with those people. I go to a Bible study every Tuesday night, okay? But I have to be very careful who I share the Iran book with. I ended up sharing my faith in it with someone who was a very dear friend of mine for 16 years, someone I worked with for a long time, who was my employer for a long time, somebody that ministered to me, and I ministered to him as well. And but then he found out that that I don't believe in the atonement doctrine, and he literally told me that he doesn't think I was ever a Christian. I was never saved, quote unquote. And he thinks that I'm lost and I'm on my way to hell, and he thinks I'm misleading other people and sending them to hell. I mean, he basically told me that I'm no longer his brother in Christ, and I never was. And so, you know, it was extreme. I mean, I've accepted that now. I've accepted that's where he is, and we still talk. But it was very heartbreaking for me for a while. You know, in fact, this last summer, that happened to me right before I went to Your Answer conference in Los Angeles. You know, and I was not in a good place at that time. You know, thank God I was at the conference, but I couldn't really receive the love and the good spirits and stuff that were there at the time. I was just not in a good place. So it was interesting. It's the only time in my life this has ever happened. But this summer I went to 2 Your Answer conferences, and both times I was not in a good place when I went. It was just I was glad I was there in a way, but I also was just it's very difficult, and it's very difficult when. And I think Pato said that there's a quote from Jesus in the Your Answer book where it says, you know, nothing is more hurtful than to be wounded in the house of a trusted friend. And just like, you know, a lot of Jesus's, you know, just like the Jews rejected Jesus, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, there will be Christians that reject the Your Answer book. But I also think, on the other hand, though, I have great hope for Christianity, which is one of the reasons why I'm still involved. And I know this to be true. There are a lot of lay people in the church in particular who go to church because they love the fellowship and they love the, you know, but they are not satisfied with what they're hearing. And this is what we were talking about last week with Julia Dean, why so many people are leaving churches. They're not, there's a hunger that is not being satisfied. And I think those people are some of the people who are most open to the Iran book. I think where it becomes difficult is when you get clergy, because clergy, you know, want to keep their jobs, they want to preserve their status as clergy, and that, then it becomes more difficult. But I think the lay movement, I think the laity would be more open potentially to the Your Answer book than clergy are. And it was the same in Jesus' time. Remember what the Your Answer book says? It says that Jesus was a layman, and the lay people, the common people, heard him gladly. It was only the religious leaders that didn't want him.
Well, right, because the reason that the common people heard him gladly is because they had nothing to lose. And
that's exactly right.
That's the kind of courage. They had everything to gain, in fact. They had everything to gain and nothing to lose. And that's why we see with the Urantia book what we're actually witnessing now. For those of you who don't realize what's going on in the world, people like Norman Ingram with UNO and the Pipeline of Light with the Urantia book Fellowship and the Fellowship's International Committee, and people working for the revelation all over the world are going into third world countries and finding that these poor people love the Urantia book. You don't have to twist their arm. They see it for what it is. They see it. And I'm reminded of an experience I had in South Africa in 1999. We went to the Parliament of the World's Religions and exhibited the Urantia book there. And Marvin Garin was working the booth one morning by himself, and he had a case of Urantia books, and he had some sitting out on the table. And a couple of wonderful young South African men were standing at the booth and writing verbatim, writing every word in the book down on a piece of paper.
Wow.
And Marvin walked up to this scene of these two young men sitting there at this table, writing down every word in this book. They had a piece of paper. They're writing it down verbatim. And Marvin, being the guy he is, he's very laid back, he said, "What are you doing?" And they looked up at him, startled, and they said, "Well, we're writing this down. It's a revelation, you know."
Wow.
And Marvin, you know, it kind of took him back for a minute, because this is how they characterized it. It's like Jesus saying, "Who do men say that I am?" You know, these two young men said, "It's a revelation. We're writing it down." And Marvin said, "You're right. It is a revelation." And he picked it up and he handed them each one. He said, here, you take it. It's yours. And they held it to their heart. They held it to their heart, and they looked at him and just stunned. They said, really? He said, yes, you take it. It's yours. They couldn't believe it. He was giving it to them. So, you know, and this is what's happening in third world countries everywhere we take the Urantia book. And I have to think about, you know, the great Urantia Moda that says, the stars are best discerned from the lonely experiential depths and not from the ecstatic mountaintop.
Well, that's why, you know, and I can testify to that too. As I said before, that was when I got closest to the Lord, is when I was in my moments of utter despair, and when I was going through the most painful depression I've ever been through. And I don't want to idealize depression. It can be a terrible thing. But in my particular case, you know, it was something that, you know, that God used to bring me closer to Him. But, you know, I think this is something, too, and if I may pontificate a bit for a second, I think this is something, too, where we in America don't realize just how much people in the third world appreciate truth. And they appreciate, you know, it's such a, their sense of gratitude is so much greater, you know, and our sense of entitlement is so much greater here. You know, it's so easy for us to take things for granted, you know, and there are some things we should take for granted. I mean, the Urantia book says we should take salvation for granted, you know, but on the other hand, I think about the difference between the poor in America, the so-called poor in America, and the poor in the third world. I mean, you know, the people the government calls poor in America, a lot of them have TV sets and automobiles, and they're certainly not starving. A lot of them, you know, are fat. You know, not a criticism, just a fact. You know, and the people,
just an observation.
Yeah, in fact, you know, I was talking to a girl who I knew. And I said, do you know what it's really like to be hungry? And she goes, yeah. She goes, I was homeless for 3 days. And I said, what'd you do about it? She goes, well, I went to my mom and asked her for help. And I said, okay, if you were living in the third world, you wouldn't be able to do that because your mom would be in the same boat you were in. You know, and here in America,
there
you know, when people think about poverty, poverty really, I think, is characterized by a lack of choices, a lack of options. And here in America, people have so many choices. They have so many safety nets. And I'm glad, thank God for that. And that we're extremely blessed. But the thing is, that's something that a lot of people don't think about. They don't think about, how blessed we are. And I think about, you know, the poor who come here from abroad, you know, and are so grateful for what we've got here. And then I think about a lot of the so-called American poor who just, you know, have this sense of entitlement. And I think that a lot of this can also be true. I think if we're not careful, we can become spiritually complacent, too, and just sort of think, oh, yeah, well, whatever, this Urantia book, yeah, whatever it is, you know.
Well,
and the people
in
the
definitely...
I'm sorry?
It's definitely that way.
Yeah, and you know, in America,
to get someone
and, you know,
to
and in the third world, people are just, you know, it's almost like, I don't know if it has anything to do with being physically hungry, makes you spiritually hungry. I don't know what it is, but the spiritual hunger just seems so much greater. And maybe it's because, you know, they don't have all the distractions we have, you know. I mean, they're getting some of them. They're getting Western, you know, some of the Western distractions, and God bless them, I don't want to lower their living standard, but the point is that, you know, I don't know all the reasons for it, but there's something, you know, something about going without that that makes you turn within. I don't know.
I agree. Well, listen, we have a call. Our dear friend
Okay.
Ann would like to talk to us for a minute. Hold on.
Hello.
Hi, Ann.
Paula?
Hi.
Hi,
you're
can
on
y'all
air.
Hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, hi, everybody. Hi, Andre.
Is it Ann?
Yeah.
Yes, hi, Andre.
Hey, Ann, how are you?
Great.
Good.
Okay, I've been listening, and I wanted to make a few comments. Number one, I'm with some Chinese friends, and they're here from China, and they'll be going back in January. And they listened to part of the broadcast, and when you were talking about accidents in time and space, when the great earthquake, well, I won't say great, but when the terrible earthquake happened, one of my friends wrote a beautiful poem, and he delivered it in a Christian church. And before he went up to the platform, one of the preachers prayed and thanked God for the earthquake, so that those people would they'd have an opportunity to go in and save those heathens. That's hard for us to imagine, isn't it?
Oh,
yes.
That's nearly impossible.
But when we walked outside after the, because my husband grabbed my leg, I thought my husband was going to get up and leave, and we would have had it not been for my Chinese friend. And when we got up to walk outside, and I've shared this briefly before, he said to me, my friend, he said, you know, we like the reflection of Jesus through you better. And these are people that were not raised with any concept of God. And I think that's very important. And I believe I've mentioned that on the air before, because somebody else said that. Diane said, introduce the book through your life. And I want to also talk about celebrities. Some people need to know that there are people who are very knowledgeable, and not all celebrities. I don't say that necessarily, but people who they look up to, respect. There's a reason that people are famous. They really do have quote-unquote charisma. And true charisma comes from God, from the Spirit. So that's why credibility. I've been with many people, and Paula, sitting with you, standing with you, introducing the book to thousands upon thousands of people. Sometimes it helps a person, because a lot of people, most people, are very uncomfortable taking something on their own. They need that reinforcement. That doesn't mean we look to celebrity status, but it sure doesn't hurt. Now, talking about fundamentalist Christians, Paula, you know this. Andre, I've told you. I know quite a few fundamentalist Christians and people of other religions that are religious leaders, spiritual leaders. They know about the Urantia book. Some of them read it. Paula, you made a good point. If they were to be open about it, they would be fired immediately. And so I don't know if and when that will ever happen in our particular lifetime. And does it matter? As long as the teachings are getting out there. I was in a service recently, and I won't even say where, at a very large church on the planet. Within 7 minutes, I recognized that this gentleman reads the Urantia book, and it was verified that he does. He's not up there talking openly about it. And that interview last week is a fine balance in ministry, I am open about the Urantia book in my ministry, but not always. There are certain circles I walk in that it would not be appropriate.
Right, right.
And, you know, Paula, I don't know if you know that Norm and I, we set up a table this last weekend. Did you know that? And introduced the Urantia book.
Norm.
Did you know about that? Norm Ingram.
Norm who? Oh, Norm and Ingram, really?
Yes. Yes. I was in Los Angeles.
Oh, you went down to Venice Beach with him?
Well, that's where our daughter lives. So,
right,
yeah,
okay.
I walked 4 blocks and was on the beach. And we had a grand afternoon day. And I will tell you this, and this is what Norm and I talked about afterwards. Young Jonah came down, and both of you remember Young Jonah. I believe he's called your show on occasion, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. I remember Jonah Weiss. I didn't realize he was in that area.
And Andre, he was in your workshop at the International.
Who was?
Jonah Weiss.
Jonah.
I know Jonah. Yes, I do.
So Jonah was there with us for a while, and the presence of the Spirit was very strong. The biblical term, the anointing. Now, after he left, we had two very strong, powerful, separately came, powerful Christian men of God. And one gives out Bibles free on the beach. And the other one was a stranger to, you know, he was in the spirit-filled realm. You understand what I mean? He's in the Pentecostal spirit-filled realm, total stranger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, as they approached, I saw them out of the corner of my eye, and I knew both were coming with the intention to, one in particular, to set us straight, okay?
You can just see it coming.
But the anointing was already there. The presence of the Lord was there so fully, so completely. And you've heard me say before, let me talk to fundamentalist Christians if they know about the Urantia book. I want to talk to them. That's why I went in the 80s looking for these people. I wanted to know if they were seen by the Spirit, if they had ears to hear, if what I was involved with was wrong. I needed that in the early 80s. And I've yet to have anybody try to cast bad spirits out of me. And they would pick up on the book. They would pick up on Revelation. One man of God saw a huge library behind me. He said, I don't understand this. It's one book, but yet there's this huge library behind it. Now, that's confirmation. But anyway, this man came, and he may be listening today, this great preacher. He instantly recognized that the presence of the Spirit was there. And he walked away with the Urantia book. He's already called Norman from Florida. He's called me. He's now reading the book.
Wow.
And these Chinese people that I'm with today, they're now reading the book. And no, I don't ask how much. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
No, it really doesn't.
No, it doesn't matter at all.
And
as long as they're...
But the point is, they're living a righteous life. They're in their own way. They're very, very godly people. But we don't have a clue of what it's like to be raised in a country where there's no mention of a higher power. Nada. We don't have a clue of what that means, and we need to have compassion toward that. And,
well, and
Reverend,
you know,
Peter,
I have to bring up, Ann, because you know I have a Chinese daughter.
Yes,
husband and I went to China in 1996, and we adopted a six-month-old baby girl who is, you know, we have two grown children, but this child is the light of my life. She's absolutely incredible, an incredible human being, and I adore her with my whole heart and soul like I do any of my children. She means so much to me, and many of you may have met her at the various conferences. She goes to all of them. She's my ever-ready companion, my little assistant. And when we brought her home, I went back into the Urantia book, and I read about the Chinese people again because I was curious again what the revelators had to say about them. And this time I read about the yellow rays with a much more open mind. Let's put it that way, because I'd been to China. I'd been with the Chinese people. I fell in love with them, and this is what I found. The Urantia book says every time you go anywhere in the world or travel is one of the things that will bring about world peace faster than anything, trade and travel. Because when you go there, you see them, you learn about them, you get to know their motives and sentiments, and you fall in love with them. And everywhere I've gone in the world, to Africa, to China, to Chile, you know, I end up falling in love with the people of that place, and now I understand them. And so I went back to the book, and I read again The Later Chinese Civilization. I highly recommend this section. It's from Paper 79, Andite Expansion in the Orient, Section 8, Later Chinese Civilization. And I'm just going to read the last two paragraphs about the sons of Han, the yellow race, and what the revelators are highly complimental of the yellow race, in fact, maybe more than any other race on Earth. This is what they say. The formative period of Chinese civilization, opening with the coming of the Andites, continues on down to the great ethical, moral, and semi-religious awakening of the 6th century before Christ. And Chinese tradition preserves the hazy record of the evolutionary past, the transition from mother to father family, the establishment of agriculture, the development of architecture, the initiation of industry, all these are successively narrated. And this story presents, with greater accuracy than any other similar account, the picture of the magnificent, I repeat, the magnificent ascent of a superior people from the levels of barbarism During this time, they passed from a primitive agricultural society to a higher social organization embracing cities, manufacture, metalworking, commercial exchange, government, writing, mathematics, art, science, and printing. And so, the ancient civilization of the yellow race has persisted down through the centuries. It is almost 40,000 years since the first important advances were made in Chinese culture, and though there have been many retrogressions, the civilization of the sons of Han comes the nearest of all to presenting an unbroken picture of continual progression right on down to the times of the 20th century. The mechanical and religious developments of the white races have been of a high order, but they have never excelled the Chinese in family loyalty, group ethics, or personal morality. This ancient culture has contributed much to human happiness. Millions of human beings have lived and died blessed by its achievements. For centuries, the great civilization has rested upon the laurels of the past, but it is even now reawakening to a vision anew, the transcendent goals of mortal existence, once again to take up the unremitting struggle for never-ending progress.
You know what, Paula, as you're reading that, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I know that the passage there is dealing pretty specifically with the Chinese people, but I wonder if that would also include other groups in the yellow race, like the Japanese and the Vietnamese and the Thai as well.
Oh, that's it, the yellow race, the sons of Han.
Yeah.
I'll say one more thing, because my good friend, Jill, how do you say your name in Chinese? Qingqing. She's into our Urantia study group, and you can say hello.
Hi.
She has food for me now, and she and her precious husband. And she heard what you were reading, Paula. Thank you. But I would say this, if Reverend Pearson is listening, I would love to talk to him, and sometimes that helps, because I understand his reservation about wanting to go on the air without knowing what we're all about. So, and I pray now that the Lord quickened to his understanding. And I admire your willingness to take this on, because he does hear by the Spirit.
Anne, I want to say one thing, and I think it's really important. People of great religious men and women who end up being in the clergy, studying the Bible, they were called to that. And
Amen.
They were called for a reason, because they are men and women of God. They might get trapped in some dogma or some traditional, as Jesus would say, traditional barrenness. But I believe that many of them will recognize the truth of the Urantia Book when they see it, because of who they are, because they are called to God. And I have faith in that.
Well, we're told that the Spirit will recognize that which is Spirit and that which is not. And so that's what you might say, the spiritual acid test. And I love that we have had the great opportunity at the big expos, Paula. And for me, it's like when I meet someone in my life, all the beautiful personalities on the planet, it was that great teaching ground that you and Mo and the others allowed me to participate in, so that the vibration, I hate to sound New Age, but you know what I'm saying, the vibrations of it, and it doesn't matter to sound New Age, we're all New Age, we're in a New Age, but it's the vibrations of a person, the gifts of the Spirit. I'm very thankful for the gifts of the Spirit, and a lot of your Urantia Book readers don't like to talk about that, but yet that's also talked about in the papers itself. Jesus walked in the gifts in a mighty way. So I thank y'all, and I'm going to sit down and have Chinese food. But, Paul, if you don't mind, do what we said you would do. I'll put my ear set on now.
Okay, my dear.
Bye, Andre.
Thank you. Goodbye, Ed.
Well, thank you for indulging me in reading that section from the later Chinese civilization, because I just it really opened my eyes about how the you know, we talk about these things a lot, and it's a great section, and I think it's important to remember that not every, you know, what Anne said is true, that ministers have a lot to lose. They would be fired immediately. In most instances, they
would. It's really true.
Someone said on the board that, you know, we need James Dobson or, you know, some of those other big evangelicals in the right to endorse your Rancho book. But I have to believe that if they endorsed it, they could be fired immediately.
They would. They would be completely, they would be.
I don't think that, you know, I don't think anybody is above the dogma, let's say, you know, because it holds men and women in an iron band. Those are Jesus's words, you know, the iron band of so-called fossilized truth, crystallized truth.
And, yeah, I wonder sometimes if, as you were talking, I was wondering, you know, are the celestial beings and is Michael, are they going to judge us for keeping, you know, some of this stuff secret from other people? But, you know, I was thinking about that, but Jesus knew who to share things with and who not to share things with. I mean, it's like the talk he had with Nathaniel in the Rancho book about the scriptures, when he tells Nathaniel that the scriptures are not the word of God. But he tells him, he says, you know, I'll talk to you about this only on condition that you do not repeat this to your brethren who are not prepared to receive this teaching. So even Jesus understood that there's a time and a place for everything. There's a time to share, you know, we give people whatever truth they can handle, you know, and, you know, truth is very powerful. And some people can only handle so much of it. It's kind of like giving somebody, you know, some people can handle, you know, a little bit of, you know, some people can handle maybe a jalapeno pepper, and other people can handle something hotter, you know, I guess. Maybe that's my way of putting it. But, I mean, you know, but I don't think Jesus is going to judge us for the decisions we make about these things, because I think that he, you know, he understands the value of prudence. And prudence is something that, it's a virtue that I've only recently begun to appreciate. I think when we're young, we don't value it as much. But it's something that, you know, we're on an evolving planet, and I think that, you know, there comes a time when we need to realize that, you know, it's a good thing to discern people's readiness and what they're ready to hear and what they're not ready to hear.
Well, you know, it's absolutely true, and you know, a great quote from the Arantia book says, you know, light can be good, but too much light can be blinding.
Right.
And, you know, so, and everybody has a capacity, and God is, you know, when you get to know God, you understand what a perfect and loving parent God is. That he's not going to give you more than you can handle. He's not going to reveal more than you're ready to know. He's not going to shock you. God is not shock and awe. It's like another place in the book says, the Spirit never drives, only leads. You know, which is respectful of your free will, respectful of your right to choose. God is ultimately respectful that, you know, you have the right to come of your own free will. And in fact, that's the only way he really wants you to come, because you choose to come. Not
that's
because
right.
you were frightened into coming or coerced into coming or forced into coming, but because you are attracted by his goodness and his truth and his beauty, and you want to come. You naturally, and children, honestly, children are naturally attracted to goodness. So, you know, I think our job as religionists, all of us that are called to ministry, all of us that are called to God in any way, is to hold him up in such a way that he becomes truly attractive to his children that don't know him, so that they become interested in this good God, this loving God, this kind and omnipotent God. I mean, if we really try to think about what that means, omnipotent, omnipresent, we can't escape him. There's nowhere we can go where he is not.
Right, right. That's right. And that's why, and I'm so glad you mentioned this, Paula, because, you know, one of the reasons that Carlton Pearson why his membership in his church dwindled so quickly is because he rejected the doctrine of hell and of eternal damnation.
Right.
And, you know, if you think about this, one of the things that people say, some people say, well, hell is a place where you're separated from God forever. But the only way you can be separated from God, really, is to not exist. Because if God is truly omnipresent, he's everywhere, then there's no place where he is not. So how can you truly be separated from God unless you cease to exist? And that's exactly what the Ransom Book says happens to people who truly, truly, with every fiber of their being, reject God. They will just cease to exist. That's the only sensible explanation I can find. Because, well, for a couple of reasons. One is I just don't see any value in eternal punishment. You know, one of the things that is interesting, Christianity and most religions believe that goodness will finally triumph over evil. Well, if goodness triumphs over evil, then, see, the problem to me with believing in an eternal hell is that you have to believe, if you believe in that, then what you're really saying is that evil exists forever in some form, you know, even if the evil doer is being punished. But what's the point of you know, preserving evil like that perpetually? I mean, if someone's really wicked and really, really iniquitous, then at some point the universe is going to have to say, you know what, this is garbage. We need to get rid of it, you know. And so that's the only sensible, if you want to call it, it's kind of like a spiritual ecosystem, you know. That's the only sensible approach that I can think of is that, you know, ultimately, iniquity has to be eliminated. It has to be destroyed. But that is something that the Ransom Book says we do to ourselves. It says that people who it says ultimately such sin-identified individuals have actually destroyed themselves. That's really what it is. The book says that the loss of extinction, the loss of existence, the extinction of a person is really, it's really not a punishment. They say it's an inevitable consequence. So it's really like reaping what you sow. If you jump out the window, you're going to break your legs, you know. So it's just something I thought was I could touch on, especially in light of our interview next week with Reverend Pearson.
Oh, and it's so enlightening to think about that. To think about, you know, the thing that always comes to me when we're thinking about this, about eternal life and about, is what do you identify with? And the Arantia book early on tells you this is ultimate reality. And if you identify with ultimate reality, which is God, the first source and center of all things and beings, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, so you think about him and you identify with him, you become like him. You become like what you identify with. If you're identifying with reality, you become increasingly more real. If you identify with unreality, you become more increasingly unreal. And Jesus said it so simply, as Jesus always did, because he was a master teacher, obviously. He said, and he was teaching the people of his day, and he taught in parables oftentimes. He said, I am the vine, and you are the branches. And when you think about that, you think, okay, you got a vine and you got branches. If you cut yourself off from the vine, where do you get your sustenance now?
Right.
You know, somebody who deliberately cuts himself off from the vine, in other words, rejects the vine and says, I reject what you offer. I reject you as being unreal and untrue, and I'm going over here. Then it becomes, in a sense, Jesus, we know Jesus is the vine. He's coming directly from the first source and center of all things. He's coming directly from paradise. And he is our way shore, ultimate way shore. And he is the father of this universe and the creator of the world that we're standing on. He is the vine. And if we reject the vine and cut ourselves off from what sustains our life, then where do we have sustenance? We can't choose what vine we come from. Reality is this is the vine. And we are a branch on that vine. And then the other side of that is we can't cling to that living vine and be withered and dead and useless, you know. So I think that we really have to embrace the reality of all that is and what we value and identify with that. And I think you're absolutely right, Andre, when you say, you know, God is not angry at us. the Arranger book says he is willing that none should perish.
That's right.
None.
That's right.
Because he cherishes all of us, and I think I reiterated this several times on the show now, but, you know, that great quote about you're irreplaceable in infinity without duplicate in eternity. There you go. There's your value. He can't ever create you again. You are.
And that's why I think, you know, that's why it's so funny, because I was just recently at a birthday party, and I was asked to give the prayer. And actually, my friend who told me that I'm not his brother in Christ anymore, we happened to be there, but it was for another friend of ours. And I gave a prayer, and I was able to share some Urantia Book truths without mentioning the book. You know, I said, one of the things I said is I think one of the reasons people appreciate weddings and funerals and birthdays, you know, one of the reasons why those three things are so important in our society is because, and in cultures in so many parts of the world, is because they remind us of just how unique and irreplaceable each human being really is. You know, what are you saying at a birthday? You're saying, you know, we are celebrating you. We're celebrating your uniqueness. We're celebrating the fact that you came to the world. There's no one else like you. And I mentioned, you know, in my prayer that personality is the most important thing in the universe, you know, sometimes when I think about that, you know, it's so funny. It's kind of ironic. It's a paradox, Paul. You know, the one thing we all have in common is that we're all unique.
And isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
Isn't that, you know, we all come from the same source. We're unique, yet we all stem from the same exact source. And
yes,
we have our source, our creator, we have in common. You know, but each one of us is like a unique blossom, if we choose to be. You know, we can choose not to identify with that reality. And we can choose to identify with things that are temporal. And like those temporal things become temporal. I mean, you know, as hard as that sounds, I think it's true. It's what we identify with. We become what we identify with. If we identify with eternal realities, we become eternally real.
Yeah, and I think it's really amazing, too, when you think about the Arantia book, one of the things that I think is so amazing is how much dignity God gives us. God gives us so much dignity. He lets us have the last word. I mean, if we choose to identify with things that are completely temporal, then we'll be temporal. If we choose to identify that with things that are eternal, we'll be eternal. So, you know, it's up to us. You know, free will is our when it comes to our spiritual eternal destiny, our free will is absolute. It's sovereign, you know. We have the last word, and that also to me, and I've talked about this before. To me, it shows me how humble God is. That God is so humble that He's willing to do that. That He's willing to give us the last word.
Well, and this really calls for a quote. This is from Paper One, Section One, the Father's name, and the quote says, "The Universal Father never imposes any form of arbitrary recognition, formal worship, or slavish service upon the intelligent will creatures of the universe. The evolutionary inhabitants of the worlds of time and space must of themselves, in their own hearts, recognize, love, and voluntarily worship Him. The Creator refuses to coerce or compel the submission of the spiritual free will creatures of His material creatures. The affectionate dedication of the human will to the doing of the Father's will is man's choicest gift to God. In fact, such a consecration of creature will constitutes man's only possible gift of true value to the Paradise Father. In God, man lives, moves, and has his being. There is nothing which man can give to God except this choosing to abide in the Father's will. And such decisions, affected by the intelligent will creatures of the universes, constitute the reality of that true worship which is so satisfying to the love-dominated nature of the Creator Father." The thing I love so much about that quote is the line, "The affectionate dedication of the human will to the doing of the Father's will is man's choicest gift to God." and in fact the only gift that has any value.
That's really the only thing we can give to God.
Right. What else can we give him?
I actually think there's another place in the book, I think right before paper one, I think, is where it says that that's the only gift we can give to God. I think it says that, but I don't remember exactly. But yes.
Well, that may be the place where it says it. And I think that, you know, he is truly a parent, and he craves to be loved by us. No parent wants their child to do anything because they're afraid.
Exactly.
You know, no loving parent wants to frighten their child into obedience. A loving parent will try everything to get the child to see the wisdom of the right choice and the righteousness of the choice, rather than, you know, if you don't do this, punishment is sure and swift, and that's the end of the story. You know, I find that, and I have found, I've raised three children now, when they get to the age of reason, what I call the age of reason, and the Arantia book says that's when they make a moral choice, all of a sudden you can reason with them, and you can say, well, now this is the rightness and wrongness of this. And they get it, you know. And I think that's where God is with us. He's reasoning with us. He's trying to get us to the place where we see the rightness and wrongness of things. And he's trying to get us to the place where we're motivated for the right reasons. Not just, we're not motivated by the fear of punishment anymore. We're actually motivated by righteousness as its own reward. Doing right is its own reward, and it creates goodness everywhere you go. So I think that's the essential difference. And I don't know how this discussion with
I'm sorry, what's the last thing you said?
I don't know how this discussion with Carlton is going to go next week.
Oh.
I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope that, you know, you guys on the board, I hope you'll think up some questions, because here's a man who had a mega church, and he had, let's say he had it all. He was like Jesus. The 5,000 were ready to completely endorse him. And then he had this vision from God, a dream. I don't know exactly what happened, but I know that somehow God revealed to him that there is no hell. And he, in faith, stood up before this huge congregation and told them, I now know there is no hell. And when I talked to his assistant, you know, because I called her to see where I should mail the book to, she expressed something to me that I thought was very human and very poignant. She said, you know, before I had lots of assistants and lots of helpers. And she said, now there's nobody. It's just
wow.
Me holding down this fort. And she said, it's hard. And I thought of the apostles, you know, how they felt when the 5,000, you know, all but 100 walked away.
And, you know, that gives me so much more appreciation for her because, you know, I, at first, I was, you know, I'll be honest, I was a little frustrated because we hadn't gotten the book on time. And, but, she's probably really, and she's in a really, they're in a real transition right now because, Carlton just got a preaching post at this church, this Unitarian church that he didn't have one before, and you know, and they're trying to get, you know, I mean, his assistant doesn't even have a voicemail yet. I mean, it's just so, you know, I've got to really really hand it to her and really she's really in a tough spot, and you know, and so is Carlton. But on the other hand, they're getting a new audience, they're getting a lot of new people coming in, you know, Carlton's doing a lot of speaking around the country and that kind of thing. So, you know, I just pray that he'll continue to find success in his new, you know, in his new endeavors. And I just, again, really, I look forward to the interview as well. I think it's going to be great. And I really look forward to getting the book as well and really, really finding out more about what he's saying.
And, you know, and we know that the Arantia book uncategorically is, you know, disavows that God would ever want to torment anybody in hell forever, and that God, it says that God the Father transcends God the Judge.
That's right.
And that God is not a stern judge whose chief delight is to detect his children in wrongdoing and see that they're adequately punished. and that these concepts of God are puerile and primitive. And so, you know, whether or not Carlton reads the Urantia book or even believes it, I'm okay with that, because I have a lot of admiration for a man who realizes a great truth and has the courage to stand up for that. Against all odds, I mean, I think that takes extraordinary courage. And to face the persecution of your friends and your family, because
yes,
you hold something as true and you hold it in your heart and you know it's true and you will not go back to believing.
Or, Paula, and it really does hurt when people do that to us. It really does. And people that we love and trust, you know, turn their backs on us. But you know what? I will say this. Thank God, though, at least, that we're not living in an age or in a country where we're literally persecuted, you know, and that we have to pay for our faith with our blood. You know, I thank God for that. And I pray that it will never come to that in America, at least, with readers of the Urantia book. Although there are places, unfortunately, around the world where people are still being persecuted for their faith. And, you know, that's still going on, unfortunately, even in this day and age.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I mean, I've had, it's a different kind of persecution. I mean, gee, the guy that lost his job, that was pretty severe.
Yes.
And those folks that got
yes.
kicked out of their church after being such beloved and trusted members, you know, it's like without, you know, being condemned without a trial, that was pretty severe.
Sure,
and my
sure.
heart goes out to them because, you know, and I know it takes a lot of courage. And sometimes, you know, you have to fly below the radar or you won't be able to do, I mean, you know, what you're sacrificing then and what they sacrificed and what that man that was in the church, in the Baptist church who lost his job. I remember hearing that the board, the council that he was called before, told him, we do not pay you to teach these children how to think. We pay you to teach them what to think.
Oh, wow.
And
they actually admitted that. They actually admitted that that's what they do.
Oh, yes, they did. And,
wow.
And I think that if you're going to indoctrinate somebody into a belief system, you have to do that because, you know, our children are logical.
Yeah.
And as time goes on, they get progressively more logical, and I think this touches on the heart of what Julie was saying last week. It's not going to fly. We're not going to be able to keep forcing this new wine of our children into these old skins. They're just not going to buy it. They're too logical, and they've been, you know, and they're going to need more, and they're going to want more, and we have to rise to that occasion. We can't keep imagining that we can force them into believing something, as the Urantia book would say, is primitive and puerile. And as the book says, you know, it's hardly worthy of an age of science.
That's right.
And enlightenment. It's not worthy of that. And it also tells us we need to, that the challenge of this age is to learn to think better. Achieve better thinking, better thoughts. So that really is our challenge, to think high, think better, and think just like this series, Andre, that you've laid before us all, to think out of the box, which
right.
is out of the shell, out of the construct or the form that we've given it, and imagine, and I salute all your Urantia book readers, and I salute all people of courage who have come to that place. Just like Sheila said when her minister clapped and applauded her for having a crisis of her faith because she was thinking about it. I salute anybody who really asked the question because Jesus promises that an answer is coming if we only ask. But if we don't ask, you know, I've learned to respect the universe as, you know, what you just said, Andre. Ultimately, free will is sovereign. If you don't initiate, they're not going to respond. They're going to take you if you want to go. But you have to ask the
yes.
question.
I do believe, though, that God does take the initiative in the sense of you revealing himself to us. But then it's up to us to respond. Because in the Urantia book, it does say, you know, Jesus does say that God takes the initiative in going out to find the lost sheep and doing all that stuff. But so I do believe that God, in his infinite grace, does take the initiative, but it's never done in any kind of coercive manner.
Oh no, and you know, somebody pointed out to me once that great picture, you know, the great I can't think of the artist, but it's a picture of Jesus standing at the door knocking, right? and he's standing there knocking and waiting for the door to open.
Uh-huh.
And my friend pointed out to me, look, there's no knob on that side.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the next time you see that picture, look, there's no knob. Jesus wouldn't open the door. You know, he's waiting for you to open it. And so he's standing and knocking. And if any man will open the door to him, he'll come in and sup with him. And, you know, what that's saying is, I'll come in and have a personal relationship with you. We'll be intimate. We'll be intimate
that's
friends.
Right.
Yeah. And that's certainly my experience with God and with Jesus to the degree.
And, you know, I think there's even a deeper meaning to that, because at least from the biblical point of view, that book, it's interesting because that phrase actually is in the Bible. It's in the book of Revelation. And the book of Revelation was written to believers, to people who already were Christians. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people use that phrase, you know, behold, I stand at the door and knock. They use it to evangelize people who are not believers. But I think it has a meaning for people even who already are believers, because we all have little doors in our hearts, you know, that we don't let God into. And sometimes it takes, you know, God will just continue to gently knock, and then we'll gradually let him in a little more, a little more, a little more. So, you know, it's just, I think there are different levels of that as well.
Yeah, I agree. And so often in Jesus' words are multiple levels of meaning that if you think about them, you know, for instance, just as you seek, so shall you find.
Yes.
Well, if you're looking for negative, that's what you'll find. You know, it's not just about looking for truth. It's also, you know, it's also an admonition. Be careful what you look for.
Yes.
That's what you'll find.
Yes.
You know? So, I don't know, I love to contemplate the words of the Master, and just could do it endlessly, and I find that the universe is very respectful, and in you know, going back to Julie and what we were talking about last week, I told you I thought about this a lot, about this question of why isn't God answering my prayers? And, you know, I never had that question. I never said to myself, why isn't God answering my prayers? And I understand, you know, when she elaborated, I can't have a child. I can't find a mate. I can't be well. Why isn't God answering my prayers? And I think that in some way, that's magical thinking.
Yeah.
You know, that God is just magical, and because you asked, he's going to fix it for you.
But I think it's a very, very easy misunderstanding to have, though, because, you know, there are verses in the Bible that say things like, if you ask anything in my name, I'll give it to you, you know. And but you know, the answer book again clarifies this for us, because I think what ends up happening is people just think, well, if I ask in Jesus' name, then I'll get anything I want, you know. And the book says that has become, people treat it like it's some kind of supreme magic. You know,
yeah.
And I think, you know, again, we need to read Jesus' words spiritually. It's kind of like Nathaniel, you know, when Jesus said, you know, if I, you know, when Jesus told Nathaniel about the golden rule, and he said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and Nathaniel said, but what if you're a perverted person who wants to lust after other people, and you know, he was a lust after you, you know, and Jesus says, look, Nathaniel, you continue to interpret my teaching in such an unspiritual way. And then he talks about the six levels of you know, the golden rule, and how there's the level of the flesh, the level of feelings, like, there's all these different levels at which you can interpret the golden rule. So I think we, you know, when we say, you know, if you ask anything in my name, you know, again, it doesn't mean literally anything. And I love the way the Urantia book also clarifies certain things. Like in the Bible it says, you know, if you have faith, you can move mountains. Well, the Urantia book says move mountains of material difficulty. It doesn't just say move mountains. So you get a clarification of that. The other one is when you were mentioning today, seek ye first the kingdom of God. I love again how the Urantia book clarifies what it says in the Bible. In the Bible, it says seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these other things will be added unto you. In the Urantia book, it says, I think it says seek the kingdom of God, and I think in all things essential to eternal survival or something like that will be added unto you. I can't remember exactly how they put it. But, you know, there's something, you know, the point is it doesn't mean you're going to get anything you want. It means that you will, that when you, what, I think what's really being said here is that when you give your life to God, you know, God is going to make sure that, you know, he's going to finish what he started. He's going to make sure that his will is done in your life. And that, and so you can have faith and confidence in that.
Yeah, and I think it's a point of view of just what we were saying earlier. You know, you can't go through the life believing that you're a victim of God. You're a child of God.
Right.
And whatever, you know, whatever the cards are that are dealt to you, it adds that chance for you to focalize your skills and your grace in dealing with that. And whether it means being childless, I mean, I went to China and adopted the most beautiful child in the world. So you don't have to remain childless. There's other options. You know, there's always other options. And sometimes we just think ourselves into a box. And I think that's sad, you know, because we don't have to do that. And, you know, the Arantia book says that our guardian angels don't coerce us. But, and I've come to believe, just to preface this, that this is a universal paradigm. No being in all the universe will coerce you. But once you make a decision, your angels will work with you to help you make the most of that decision. Mm. So the key is to decide, you know, I want a child and I'm going to have a child. And now the angels are going to help you make the most of that decision.
Right.
And, you know, probably one of the wisest things I've ever heard, you know, and I'm a wise old adage kind of person. Words of wisdom stay with me. It's probably why I love the Arantia book so much. But is God helps those who help themselves. And it's an old, I don't know if it comes from the Bible or where it comes from. But
no, it's not in the Bible. I can guarantee that.
But it may be an old,
it's kind of an old American
adage, an old
thing.
Puritan, maybe. But it's true. You know, if we'll put forth the effort, then God will, you know, it's like our good friend Chris Halverson says, God can't drive a parked car.
So no, and I think that's true. I guess the only thing that concerns me about that statement is that you know, there are times, though, I think, most of us come to a place in our lives, though, where we recognize, you know what, Lord, I can't do it on my own. I need you. And I think that I think it is important to come to that place. In the 12 steps, they call it, you know, being powerless. And I think there are times, and I'm not saying that we remain in that state. We don't remain powerless. But I think there are times when we need to come to that place where we recognize, you know what, I can't do it anymore by myself. I've tried to help myself, and I can't. You know, and I think that there's a time when, you know, and I believe God honors that as well. So I guess I don't really disagree with what you're saying. I just think I think you have to be careful, because I think that there are that statement is sort of I just think it's like one half of the, you know, it's kind of one half of the coin, you know.
Yeah, I agree with that, Andre. I do, and I think that God does help those who need help, but you know, you also have to be willing. It's like Jesus saying, you know, refuse to offer over much sympathy to those cowardly souls who only half-heartedly stand up before the trials of living.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So. Well, we're at the end of our show.
We're just
friend,
about out of time, yes.
Yep.
So, folks, thanks again for listening today. And we'll be back next week, hopefully, with Carlton Pearson. And I am really looking forward to this again. And I... you know, I'm going to be just really looking forward to reading his book this week, and we'll just end. His book, by the way, is called The Gospel of Inclusion, if anyone wants to go find that on Amazon. But again, thank you guys for listening, and we will be back next week, once again, on The Cosmic Citizen.